Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the last Sunday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with a community of listeners. Tonight's hosts are me, Sean, and
Janelle,
and
Ruth.
We all attend Laytonville High School. Tonight our topic is, what does testing prove? It seems that testing has always been a component of our educational system. Students take frequent tests to show that they understand course materials. Test scores are used to create a ranking system within each class. The resulting grades become permanent record of each student's relative progress through high school. Grades can be used to motivate higher achievement, but for many students, they become an embarrassment and a reason for punishment. Grades are frequently used as an indicator of future success or failure. Some students find that the tests are usually easy and do not produce stress. Others find testing harder and harder, and their stress levels make them score worse and worse. By 7th grade, most students think of themselves as A students, B students, or passing students or failing students. For decades, many educators have questioned this system. As high school graduation draws near, many students are required to take the SAT test for college entrance. For many young people, this is a grueling experience, and poor performance in a 3 to 5 hour test can determine a person's educational fate. For decades, many educators have questioned this system. In an effort to determine how schools are performing, standardized tests have become a mainstay for the educational system. These tests are called high-stake testing because the consequences of low scores may include retaining a student from another year, holding back diplomas, or holding back funding to a school district. These annual standardized tests are used to evaluate the teachers, principals, and entire schools. Standardized tests can shape teaching and learning in ways that can harm children and narrow the discussion of what schools need to do better to provide an education. Teachers feel obligated to teach to the test, often shaping their curriculum for several months in preparation. These are some of the topics we'll discuss tonight on Youth Speaks Out. We hope that you are interested in these subjects and will want to participate. We're at the Willits Studio, and our phone number is 456-9991. We will encourage everyone to join in the discussion in about 20 minutes. So let's begin discussing the classroom grading and the effects it has on students. Janelle, what do you think that grades are an accurate assessment of what a student has learned in a class in general?
I think that grades in some cases are an accurate assessment, but one of the really important things is how the teacher grades. A lot of teachers, especially in classes like chemistry and physics, base their grades solely on testing. And a lot of students really have, you know, testing anxieties, and the tests don't fully show the depth of the information they have on the subject they're being tested on. So I think that in certain cases, grades can be a fairly accurate assessment of what a student really knows. But in some cases, they're really just a drawback for the student.
Ruth, do you think that tests can be like a learning experience for students at all? I mean, do you learn anything when you take a test other than, you know, what you don't know?
Yes. I think that tests help a lot. Like, if you have a test every week or once a month before a semester final, then I always learn more by the end of the test, because if there's an answer that I don't know, then after the test I go and look it up, or we'll correct it and I'll find this answer. And so I do learn a lot from tests.
Do you think that, I mean, tests are usually what's used for grading, but there are other things, and do you think that, like, term papers or research papers or projects, do you think that these are better assessments of what people know?
I think that projects and term papers are usually better because a student has more time to focus on it and, you know, put a lot more effort into it. If it's just a test, a lot of the time the testing period isn't very long, and it's just about, you know, how quickly a student can answer multiple choice questions or sort of regurgitate what they know into not really a well-formed essay. But if it's something like a term paper or a project, the student is able to put some more time into it and, you know, really, really think about what they know and what's important to put in the paper.
Mm-hmm. Yep. One possibility that people have been bringing up is the idea of using a pass-fail system instead of grades. I know that several, top-end colleges use this system, such as Yale. They use this system, it's a pass-fail system, instead of individual grades. Do you think that this works better in colleges, and do you think it would work in high school?
I think it works really good in colleges, but in a high school level, a lot of students don't really want to be there, and so they don't really try. And if all they had to do was pass the class, then I think that they wouldn't try as hard as if, like, getting an A or a B, because also a GPA helps a lot for getting into colleges, and if all they did was pass-fail, then you wouldn't really have to try as hard on tests to get an A or a B. You just have to try to pass, and passing isn't, like, it's hard, but it's a lot easier than getting, like, an A or a B.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, and I think that one of the bad things about the pass-fail system is that there isn't a distinction between a student who just barely passed or one who really knows the material and would have gotten an A in the class. But I also think that it's a little bit better for certain students in certain cases. Like, I'm taking a math class at Drew Mendocino College right now, and I probably wouldn't have been able to get an A because algebra is kind of a weak subject for me. And I think that it's really good in that kind of situation because it won't lower my GPA. And like Ruth said, your GPA does really determine what college you're able to get into, and it can be kind of a good thing or a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. So do grades inspire better work?
Yeah, well, for me it does. For me, getting an A feels really good. And the difference between an A and a B for me is really big, and so I try really hard just to get those few extra points on the test to make it to an A, and so it inspires me to try harder and work harder. But with some people, they don't care. As long as they pass, then it's okay. So with some people, the pass-fail system would be better than with grades, but with me, it's definitely the grades that inspire me.
Sean, what do you think about preparing for tests and how teachers prepare their students for their tests and other tests that they're required to take?
Sometimes preparing methods can be good because they teach, research abilities and such. But I think one of the problems that a lot of teachers start doing is as the tests become more and more centralized on certain topics and certain facts and figures and formulas, is that what they do to prepare is they pretty much give a copy of the test, and all you have to do is memorize a certain number of little things, and that's all you have to memorize to do good on the test. And testing doesn't, and these sort of tests and that sort of preparation, I don't think really accurately reflects what people know about the subject. All it means is that you're able to read a list of 10 words and write them back a few hours later,
I agree with that. I can see it. But do you think that teachers put more effort into teaching a curriculum for different types of testing than they do for things that they think are actual, good knowledge that the students really need to learn about?
Mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of times, as tests gain more importance, teachers will focus on kids getting good grades on the test instead of rather just teaching the material. What do you think would be a better evaluation? Because it seems that one question that I know most teachers get often from both the community and from parents is, how is my, student child doing? They're wondering, how to measure if they're learning this stuff. And this is where tests have been used. But most teachers consider it to be a very useful method of determining what people know. But do you think there's other effective methods for this?
Well, testing is a really good method for some people, but for others, there's test anxiety, and they do really well in the class, but once they get to the test, they just freeze up, and then it's not an accurate way of showing what they've learned in the class and how they're doing. And so I think that another way of showing, what they've learned in the class is maybe talking the teacher-to-student conversation, and just so the teacher can, see what the student is understanding and what the student is not understanding. That would help, and maybe also, an essay or something where the student can just explain themselves instead of having to answer questions and being put under a spotlight.
I agree with that, and what one of my teachers does, which I think is really helpful, is he puts comments on the essays that he grades, and And it really helps because instead of just saying, you know, oh, you got, you know, 70% or 80% on this essay, he can really focus on what specifically would be better to improve on and, you know, what the student is really strong at. And I think that maybe not quite as, this wouldn't be quite as accurate as tests, but I think that it would be another thing for teachers to look at and something that it would be nice if parents would accept the actual comments of the teacher instead of just an A or a C grade.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sean, do you think that, are you familiar with the No Child Left Behind Act?
Yeah, this is something I wanted to start talking about. It's a recent standardized test that's been around for a while. The California STAR test is the one that every kid that's in our school system right now knows about very well. Every year since, I think the first year I took it was like fourth grade or fifth grade or something, I started taking the STAR test, and every year you take it, and it's usually just in the math or the English, or there's usually like maybe a few different science regions, but pretty much just math and English. And you fill in a lot of bubbles.
You spend
about a week filling in bubbles. And for the test, most kids never really care about it, and it didn't seem that important because you don't get a grade on it, you don't, you know, pass or fail a class, you don't get scholarship money for it. It really doesn't affect the students directly, which is why I know a lot of kids who just, you know, make designs out of the bubbles or, you know, fill in their initials over and over. But something that's recently happened, a recent development, is a few years ago, the No Child Left Behind Act was passed. And this is a federal program, which is a change from the historical standpoint where states were in charge of the educational system, because the federal government is now taking a stance and sort of regulating what is learned. Because the No Child Left Behind Act requires that by judging schools on these standardized testings that they improve on a year-to-year basis, that every year you have a new standard of what every student must do better, and that every student will eventually be proficient, which is above average on the rating system, which doesn't make much sense. I think what's going to happen is that because not every school can, you know, be above average, and not every school can improve from year to year, you know, every year they can't improve, what happens is that under the No Child Left Behind Act, if for 2 years in a row you fail to meet your the standards that you're supposed to rise to, then what happens is that the, you know, federal government or the state government starts sending you support and, you know, trying to help you do better. But if 2 more years passed and you have still failed to meet your new standards, which are always rising up, if you fail to meet these standards, then the government takes over the school and they pretty much replace the administrators, replace the teachers, and completely reorganize the school with new curriculum, new styles, everything changes, which is kind of a scary thought.
Yeah, I think it's a good plan. Like, it's good to try to make sure that every child in school is learning something, because that's the point of school. But I think they're sort of going about it in a bad way, because the STAR testing, a lot of children do not take it seriously at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a completely inaccurate way of, like, telling who, if everybody is learning something, because there could be a genius kid in school that gets all A's and then goes and takes the STAR test but doesn't take it seriously and just makes smiley faces with the dots, and then the government's going to think, oh, this school's terrible because look at how bad these kids are scoring. So I think it's a good plan, but they should try to maybe put it into maybe a test that means something to the kids.
I really agree with that, and one of the administrators at our school that we talked to, she did support a plan that it's kind of a new thing. It's where you you can take an extra, you know, 15 or so questions at the end of the STAR test, and that actually counts for your college administration or
college placement test
for certain colleges. And I really think that that's a good idea, and sort of changing the STAR test, or the No Child Left Behind, which is now what it's referred to as, and making it really mean more to students, and that would be a lot more accurate.
It's motivating, for sure. another administrator of school is talking about one of the big problems with the the increased pressure to, you know, improve every year is that teachers more and more are told to teach exactly what is on these tests, because they have a list of what they need to know or what the students need to know by the end of the year. And so they start planning out the whole year and focusing on every little detail that's going to be on the test. And what happens is that they start sacrificing other things which were important things to know or to learn that won't be on the test. We have one teacher at a school that used to do a really great program on growing mushrooms, just like different kinds of edible mushrooms and stuff. And he spent about 6 weeks, and kids would culture them and reproduce, you know, do all this. It was a biology class. It was really helpful. I mean, you learned all these different concepts, and the kids enjoyed it. They learned a lot about growing things. But because of the increased pressure to, you know, get everything that's on the test, he gets to spend about 1 or 2 weeks a year on this, you know, just quickly go through it, and then, you know, back into the, all the vocabulary the kids have to know and all that. And I think that that's a big sacrifice, because these are important things that they weren't on the test, but you can't expect, you know, that you can't expect one test for an entire state or an entire country to encompass all the important information.
I've actually noticed teachers doing that too, changing their curriculum and changing what they, you know, think that should be taught. Especially in AP classes, both of my AP teachers have said at the beginning of the year, there are some things that, you know, we're not really going to be able to learn as much information or go as in-depth into the subject as I would like to, because we really need to get through all this information that's going to be on your AP test so that you can succeed on that. And while they appreciated the importance of the AP test, they really felt like they would rather, you know, have some more time to teach what they thought was really important for the students to learn.
Yeah. So this question is sort of brought up as, it's like, is school meant to teach you a specific knowledge or a specific thing, or is it to teach you how to learn? And so, like, that is kind of like, it's not teaching us how to learn, it's just teaching us a certain thing. And so once we're through it, it's, we've learned this, but we haven't learned exactly how to learn more.
That's a good point, because it's kind of ridiculous to think that, you know, after 4 years of high school, then that's all you need to, like, you're going to learn everything in those 4 years that you need to know. Mm-hmm. It seems better that if they're teaching you how to learn and, you know, how to gain more knowledge and how to think, you know, more efficiently and stuff, then you could spend the next 60 years of your life learning instead of 4 years of learning some facts and figures that may not actually pertain to whatever you plan to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like these tests are focusing on more individual facts instead of just, instead of learning.
Yeah, so once we get out of high school, we're going to be sort of on our own on learning how to learn more. So we'll know what we learned within those 4 years, but then it's going to be sort of a struggle to get back on our feet and learn the rest of the stuff we're going to need to know for the rest of our lives.
Just one more one thing I wanted to talk about that we wanted to discuss was the SATs. The test has been around for a long time, and it's a lot. Most colleges use this, almost pretty much every college, looks at your SAT scores to determine whether or not you're a smart kid. And I know that a lot of colleges will have, you know, essays, they look at your extracurricular activities you've done, the classes you took. But nonetheless, the SATs still have a strong, like, or serious consequences for how you score on them. And it seems sort of weird to me.
I agree, and I think that one of the things about the SAT, which doesn't really make it an accurate test and something that your entire future should be based on, is really the length of the test. I haven't taken the SAT myself, but as Sean was telling us earlier, when he took it, it was 5 hours long. And one of my teachers, my AVID teacher, actually, was telling us the other day in class that studies have shown that after the first hour of studying or, you know, using your brain and really engaging your mind, your ability to retain information and to actually, you know, think correctly, it slowly starts to decrease. So because the SAT is so long, I really think that it's inaccurate, and that the sections that are at the end of the test, students do worse on those because their ability to think has just gone down so
much. You're fried.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think that SATs are sort of designed for a specific type of person, a specific type of learning. It's not really diverse. So, like, the term brain glue was recently introduced to me, and it's like when the idea, like, how you learn. Like, if you can take knowledge and it sticks, then you can do this test and get into college. But it, like, sort of ruins diversity a little bit, because the people that get into college are going to be the people that are going to be the important people that make the difference in the world later. And so there's not going to be a lot of diversity later because of the SATs and who is let into college.
And another thing about the test, about the, like, what you have to know to do well on these tests is, I mean, I know, like, I know people who have, like, you know, majored in English and stuff, and, you know, graduated college, you know, like, studying English and stuff, but on the SAT, the essay length is, like, 25 minutes. That's how long you have to write, like, this, you know, a fully formed informational essay. And I know these people who, you know, who may have graduated from college and, you know, studying English, who couldn't do a test, who couldn't write a well-formed essay like that. It's unreasonable, because it's not so much focusing on what you know or the depth of knowledge, but how fast you can fill in bubbles and scribble away, like, several pages. Because they've proved that the more you write on a SAT, just, like, even if it's not better, like, the more you write, the better score you get. So a lot of it is just is how fast you can write there. And if you have bad handwriting, then you'll also get a bad score, you know? If you have good handwriting, you're probably going to get a better score. If you have good handwriting, you can write really fast, you're set.
Yeah, one of my teachers who was talking about the AP test said that because she has been a scorer, what the scorers actually do is they spend the first, you know, 5 seconds looking over your paper and just flip through the page and just look at your handwriting, and that's basically what they base their score on. They say, okay, does this paper look like it's going to be a 4 paper, or look like it's going to be a lower score?
Yeah, and that's too bad for me, because I don't have very good handwriting, but, I mean, I can get a pretty good point across, and I can answer a question pretty well and write thorough essays, but my handwriting isn't so great, so I'm going to have some trouble with that.
One last test that we want to do, or another test we like to talk about, is the California High School Exit Exam, which is a really much more recent development. I think they just started giving it a few years ago, and it's actually coming into effect, like, it only actually matters this year for the graduating class of this year of 2006. And this is a test that people get to take as many times as you want throughout your high school career, usually starting sophomore or junior year. And if you don't pass the test, then you can't get a high school diploma. And you can take this test a lot and stuff. And even if you graduate and you take all your classes and stuff and still don't pass it, then all you get is a certificate of completion saying that you took some classes and that you were there for 4 years and you came to school occasionally. But it seems like this could be sort of unfair because, you know, like we talked about, not everyone tests well. And I know it's a relatively simple test, but everyone's different. I mean, I know people who they'll freak out just the word test, you know? And, you know, people after, you know, if you fail it once, then the second time you're like, oh, I'm not going to do good this time. And it seems that you can have some really bright kids who know what they're talking about, and they know stuff, but they just because they can't pass the test, then they don't get a diploma, and they can't, you know, have that recognition of their hard work.
One of our administrators at Laytonville High that we talked to was saying that there was actually a couple years ago, and it's still kind of continuing today, there was some lawsuits because some students with maybe learning disabilities or who didn't do very well on tests weren't being able to pass it. And the lawsuits were sort of over, you know, should there be a specialized test for these students, but that didn't seem fair and it didn't really seem like an accurate assessment. So it's kind of an interesting thing, and we'll see where those lawsuits go.
All right, we're going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. Everyone is welcome to all, and we'd especially like to encourage the youth, their parents, and concerned friends are in the listening audience. Please call if you have questions or insights about school testing in our community. If you're beyond the school age, what effect do the grades have on your success as a human being? The phone number is, once again, 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio because we'll get a really confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please come and be a part of this discussion on the direction education testee is moving in the 21st century. Caller, you're on the air?
Yeah, can you hear me okay? I got a lot of fuzz on my end.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. I'm obviously not school age, but what I want to just say is how thrilled I am to hear youth on KZYX and how great that is and how much I'd like to hear that more, and that anything you all can do, because you're already doing it, to encourage more youth in the county to be part of the radio, I think that'd be really great, because I see it as a real hole in the way that we serve the county, and I'm very excited to have the opportunity to hear what you have to say. So thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Caller, are you on the air?
Hi there.
Hello. You're on the air.
Oh, good evening. I wanted to ask your students if they thought that maybe the stress of taking a test had any comparison to the stress of job performance, wherein that once they take a job, every day is a test.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get off the air and listen to your answer.
All right. That's sort of an interesting question. There is a lot of stress when you're taking a test. You have to, for the hours you're doing, you have to work really well. And it's sort of like when you have a job, because you're always sort of, I mean, people are always, your supervisor's always looking over your shoulder and making sure you're doing good work and stuff, but...
I think that one of the things to take into consideration, I agree with what Sean was saying in that it is very similar. I think that the one difference I can think of, which may not be very, very important, is that after you've already, gotten into college and been through college, you sort of have a feeling like you've been over the first hurdle,
mm-hmm.
and that you made it over that. And I think it gives you just a little bit more confidence
mm-hmm.
when you are applying for a job or being overseen by your supervisor or something like that.
Yeah. Caller, you're on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to discuss a little bit about proficiency ratings, basic, far below basic, when it comes to the standardized testing of the STAR test.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the point that you brought up earlier, Sean, about that schools need to have everyone proficient or better
mm-hmm.
in order to receive their funding. However, mathematically, it's impossible for half of the population to become proficient or better on the test.
Yeah.
As far as the way the percentiles work out mathematically, there will always be half of the number who take the test will always fall below 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So the system is really rigged against the schools being successful. And because people think it's a score, like I got an 80% or a 90%, they think that it's that sort of ABC rating, but in actuality, it could be the difference of one question or two question that makes someone proficient versus basic, basically skilled. That's really problematic, and yet it's not being addressed with people who are voting and electing people who are concerned with this rigged system. Do you have any comments on that?
I have one comment. We were actually talking about it earlier because it is mathematically impossible. I mean, if the government expects everyone to be above average, then that will become the new average.
Exactly.
So it is kind of a rigged system in that it's going against the school system.
I think I heard the governor recently say that something like, we want a school system where everyone is doing above average work. And
Shows how wonderful our governor is.
But you're doing a fabulous, fabulous job, and thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to be on the air bringing up these issues tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for the good program. I have a concern that isn't addressed too often, and that is what happens to the young people who are not interested in going to college. The vocational education departments in most high schools have vanished, I think. And what happens if there's a kid who's a brilliant auto mechanic or electrician or whatever.
Yeah,
they're doomed by this system, it seems to me.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, because it does seem like school is only focusing on preparing children for college these days, and then there is a lot of kids that aren't interested in going to college.
Right. I'll hang up and listen to you guys.
All right.
And thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So it does seem like there should be a few more programs helping people to just prepare for life if they don't go to college, but I don't think that they want to leave that option out there, because they just want to leave it, if you don't go to college, then you don't make money. So that is sort of an issue.
Yeah, it does seem like the colleges are kind of putting out propaganda that's saying that if you don't make it into a college, a four-year college, that is, then you're not going to be successful. And I really don't think that's the case. And I also think that there's a lot of, you know, vocational schools and programs like nursing programs and stuff that don't really get talked about in high schools. And I think that would be a better thing to do, because not everyone wants to go into college. But I have a friend who wants to be a nurse, and she's actually going to go into one of those nursing programs. But a lot of people don't really know that option's out there.
Yeah, a lot of the vocational programs in schools seem to be, I mean, they seem to be disappearing over there. They have less importance. I mean, it's hard to say for Laytonville, because we have an especially small school, but we have a building trades class now, which is just teaching the basic building techniques for, you know, construction work and stuff, and, you know, how did that cat work, and it's important. Just another problem is that, just you know, going back to what you were saying about people who don't really want to go to college and stuff, a lot of times kids may have wanted to, or, you know, may have been good in college, but in the very beginning, early in a school career, like in middle school, they pretty much classify students as, you know, they sort of start classifying them as, you know, college-bound or not college-bound. And then they spend the next few years and just sort of giving them college-bound classes or non-college-bound classes. And if you start taking the basic classes, you're going to keep taking the basic classes. And I think it's sort of sad how they separate kids like that. They don't really give you a second chance to, once you sort of get behind, you can't really catch up. And so there's a class system in the schools of the kids who are college bound and aren't.
The number once again is 456-9991.
Yeah, we'd really like to hear from you.
So, Ruth, you've taken the exit exam, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
did you think that that it was an accurate assessment of what you had learned? Or that you didn't really get to, you know, express how much knowledge you had, or there wasn't a chance to do that?
I think it was sort of, it was too easy, I thought. But, I mean, it was, I think, maybe accurate, but I think they should have let me express myself a little bit more with how much knowledge I've gained throughout high school.
Mm-hmm. All right. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. You were talking about the kids who are not college-bound a little while ago. I've turned off my radio since. Do you think the local marijuana industry entices kids who might be borderline towards college or not going to college, would encourage them more to forget about going to college and becoming part of that industry?
Definitely. It's a really... I know for a lot of kids, it's an appealing alternative. I mean, maybe it's not a good one, but a lot of kids who feel that they don't want to go to college and stuff, but suddenly there's this sort of high-paying, easy job in our area, and I think it takes a lot of kids away from college. I know several who started college and maybe went through a semester or so, then dropped off to come tend the plants at home, which is pretty sad.
Yeah, I think that maybe they should give alternatives to kids that are like that can't get the good enough grades to get into college. They should try to give an alternative so they don't have to turn to that.
Yeah, because we have a lot. I mean, all the time we have like college representatives come to our school and talk to us. You know, man, this is a really great college. You want to go here? You'll get a lot of money and stuff. But we don't get many like trades programs and stuff that come to our school and, you know, tell us, hey, look at, you know, you can make $60 an hour union wage being an electrician. I mean, most kids aren't aware of that opportunity.
Yeah, I think that trade school representatives coming to the schools would be a really good idea. Ruth, do you think that students who are already kind of behind in their schooling, do you think that having more tests or basing the grades more on tests would help them achieve more?
No, I don't. I mean, it does sort of help the kid to push themselves more so they can get better grades on the tests. But if they're already behind and they're not understanding the material, giving them a test isn't showing that they're, it's just showing, oh, look, you're not learning the material still. So giving more tests doesn't really help those kids out there that are like that.
Yeah. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, is this Sean?
Yes, it is.
This is an awfully roundabout way to talk to my neighbor, but this is Brady. I'm up in Seattle.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good.
Good show.
Thank you.
Good show. Hey, I have a question that is, as an ex-teacher that's designed to be provocative in this, on this, how's that?
I remember those questions.
Okay, well, actually, this is kind of a statement that I would give you guys the seminar on if I lived there, but I'm not, and that is that the statement would be, if the question has a right or a wrong answer, it's probably not a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think of that in this along this idea of testing?
I agree.
I think, and considering that approach, on the standardized test, SATs, all those, except for the essays, there is a right or wrong question. I mean, it's A, B, C, or D. It's one of those.
Exactly. I don't know, man. I think that as a person who taught English for 32 years plus a little in high school, one of them being yours. I think that this whole, you know, the testing thing is really unfortunate. I think it's a way for a bunch of politicians to cover their behinds. And it makes people look good. But unfortunately, as you made reference to with the mushroom story, a lot of stuff either gets left by the wayside or it definitely becomes stuff that's really not that important because it's not on the test.
Yeah.
And I think that's a long-term, real danger in this kind of, in this kind of educational environment.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, I've always thought that I always tried to do my job around the idea that one of the most important things that this school can do is to try to help a young person learn how to think.
Yeah.
And I don't think that, just this is kind of a radical view of things, I guess, but I think that there's no other institution really in this country that really is invested in having people think clearly. Certainly not the government, certainly not the corporations, and certainly not the people who run the schools, you know. But within that, there are some opportunities. So I just lay that one on you. I'm enjoying the show. Thanks very much.
Thank you
for your comments.
Carry on.
It's very interesting. I mean, the idea that we take all these tests and that they're sacrificing what we could actually be learning for what we could know on the test. And I think in the effort, I mean, it's a noble quest for the government to try and make every school good. But I think the way by doing it, by making every kid know the same things, isn't the right way to do it.
And one of the other downsides, this may be off subject a little, but one of the downsides of students nationwide learning the same things is that the colleges really, really want students who are more diverse and who will bring more interesting things to their college. So if all the students are learning the same things, then I think that will be a real downfall for the colleges and for everyone in general, just because people, when you meet somebody, they won't have, you know, new views that you can learn about and interesting things.
I'd like to go back to the comment Mr. Brady said about if the test has a right or wrong answer, it probably isn't, or if a question has a right or wrong answer, it probably isn't a very good question. And considering that, I mean, like, specifically with the exit exam, which involves, you know, getting the right answers, then you get a diploma and stuff. And there's a lot of kids who can't do that, who know stuff but can't do it. And maybe it's just because the questions, it's not so much that the kids don't make the right answers, but the schools aren't asking the right questions. And these tests aren't asking the right questions of the students. I mean, perhaps if instead of a test, you had, you know, someone come in and talk to the kid for a while or something, or play a game of chess with them, or do a puzzle with them or something, then maybe, or, you know, seminar with them, talk about different different ideas and subjects and stuff, maybe you'd see that, you know, the kids don't, it's not that they don't know the right answers, they just, they're sick of the questions.
I think that's a really interesting idea, and I agree with the sick of the questions part.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you just want a student to, you know, give you the answer you're looking for, it really isn't showing, you know, what they know, and it's not letting the student be an individual and letting them, you know, express views that are different than yours. Testing shouldn't be about the student telling you what you want to hear. It should be about the student telling you what they really think.
Yeah, I agree. And it's sort of limiting students because, like, everybody has their own special talent. And with these tests, it's just, it's not allowing the children to express that talent. And it's like, it's not letting people think outside the box. And so a lot of people are held back because of it, because the questions that they're asking.
I think what is really unfortunate, too, is that these tests, you know, I mean, failing a test or, I mean, focusing on these tests and stuff is unfortunate for the student because, I mean, it's rather unenjoyable. But I think the long-term consequences will be rather dire, because when you start focusing everyone on learning these specific things and specific knowledges to have this variety of stuff, it's going to hurt, I mean, not only our culture but our economy, because a lot of kids, I mean, they're coming out with the same skills, you know, how to fill in bubbles and the such, and not more useful, diverse skills that will create for a, you know, multicultural populace. Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, this is really great. I think to further that idea about questions that are yes or no, right or wrong, it's actually kind of scary, because it reminds me a lot of the fundamentalistic kind of thinking that's happening now. Is it this or is it that,
mm-hmm.
one or the other? And the critical thinking is absolutely lost, like, well, how did you put the question, and what information, and where did you get that, and what are your sources? These are all of the things that are lost in that kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
it's pretty scary to think that that with the intelligence you obviously have, all of you, that you're using that and gearing it and zoning in and focusing on figuring out what tester is wanting,
yeah.
what they're asking, and you're smart enough to figure out what they want to know, but your intelligence is just being dulled by that. It's
mm-hmm.
just a shame. I think it's so sad, really. So
it is.
So keep talking, and I really appreciate the show, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I definitely agree with that. It seems that a lot of the tests, especially even like the essay questions, which you would consider to be sort of a, you know, a free response thing where you could really, you know, say your opinion and stuff, a lot of it is just you figure out what they want you to say, and so much of it is just knowing how to answer a question, not knowing how to, you know, not actually having an opinion, just knowing how to answer the question.
Once again, the number is 456-9991.
Feel free to call in. I mean, we're looking for anyone. If you have any experience with school testing, or if you just, you know, have an opinion about it, call in. We're looking, you know, we want to see what direction the testing is changing throughout these years and where it's going in the 21st century, so please call. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, this is a great show. I happen to be a 67-year-old person.
All right.
But I remember tests. And you are so right on target, and your experience is so valuable. I wonder if you've taken yourselves off to the local school board or PTA and really put out your understanding of this problem, because I think it is a political situation, like some of the folks have said, and your voice is a very important one.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you've done that or if you'd consider being... you know, getting an article in the paper and going to school boards and really letting people know how students feel about it.
We haven't done too much. Unfortunately, much of the politics behind this are a a national level. I mean, the No Child Left Behind Act was a federal program, so
right.
It's tough to have a sway.
But if a lot of local school boards and states would resist it and argue against it, or you can't refuse because that's where the money comes. But we shouldn't just accept this and just roll over and not want to try to change it. So thanks a lot for your work.
Thanks for your opinion. That's a really great idea.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yes, good evening. Enjoying your program very much. I have taught in a high school history in Richmond down in the Bay Area, which was a very poor school with terrible conditions in terms of old textbooks and so on.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with one issue with the great inequalities between one school and another, and the effort to standardize these are not realistic. The other thing I'm thinking is another agenda, and the agenda is to destroy the public school system.
Mm-hmm.
And this is by putting in this kind of standardized testing, but without putting the money in or really having an examination of the tests and what kind of tests are being taken. It's like one size fits all, and it seems very clear that the way our system, education system, is developed is designed for failure. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to make it destroy the public school system and put in a voucher system, which will then have a number of people who don't qualify and have kind of an elitist group of people who have the education. Other people will be outside mm-hmm. the educational system. I hear your thoughts about that.
One thing I noticed I've heard a lot about is like on the SATs, instead of just people going in there and taking the test to the best of their ability, more and more people are turning to tutorial services and books and, you know, programs and stuff. And they spend a good deal of money is going to these outside programs to learn this stuff instead of the schools who are losing funding.
Well, it's interesting. I had experience with a number of the students were from different countries. So it wasn't a question of their intelligence, but a question of their grasp of the language in terms of the time that it took to understand what was happening. But because some of the students were slower than other students, the level of teaching was not as didn't have the same kind of quality as you have in other schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the students actually graduated and would go on, let's say, Stanford or University of California, Davis or Berkeley, they didn't have the tough kind of education that they had that you would get in a better school. And so a number of them dropped out, and they took it personally as something was the matter with them. But it wasn't the fact that they were not as smart as the students going to, let's say, a better high school, but simply because when a teacher is teaching to a whole class, they have to teach to a certain common denominator.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a crisis that isn't really dealt with in terms of making a one-size-fit-all standard test. I think that the object is not really to get students to do better on the test, but to find excuses to destroy the public school system. And mm-hmm. I'd like to hear if you have some thoughts about that.
Do you think that the charter schools are sort of a symptom of this happening, of the public schools closing down?
I think they are. And what happens is that the idea is to separate students who are more or less academically inclined, or perhaps the parents have education themselves. You have parents who, let's say, are coming from another country, whether it's from Mexico or Vietnam, we had a number of students in Vietnam, or from Laos, Cambodia, students that were not familiar with English and could not really help their children with learning with lessons, whether it's math or English. This is kind of a disadvantage to those students. And so what happens, you have more and more students dropping out.
Mm-hmm.
They get behind, and they don't go to class, and they find that they can't compete, and they drop out.
Mm-hmm.
A statistic just came out in the newspaper. A large percentage of students, Mexican-American in Southern California, dropping out. Their parents do not know the language, so you don't have the advantage of parents who have been educated in the language in our culture. It's not that they're not as smart, but simply they're at a disadvantage.
Yeah, I really agree with what you said about the one-size-fits-all kind of testing, because I totally agree with that. It does put a lot of students at a disadvantage just simply because of their background or mm-hmm. information that they haven't got a chance to learn yet.
Yeah, and also you bring up an interesting point about family life, because your family life is really important when you're going to school, because if your parents aren't pushing you or if they don't have the knowledge to help you, then it really does, like, put you behind the other children who have maybe a math teacher and a doctor as parents, you know. Mm-hmm. It's sort of unfair to those who don't have, you know, really smart parents at home.
Or parents who have grown up in the culture.
Oh, yeah, the culture, too.
See, it's interesting. You have, in European countries, you have more of a homogenous culture, and so you have tests which you have to pass in order to graduate. But we have a very different culture in our society. We have many people, particularly not say in California, but mm-hmm. but in other states, in which you have people who are, let's say, first generation
mm-hmm.
Going to school. And so it's a really disadvantage when they do not have parents who can help them. And to be able to come home and ask a parent a question about history or English or mathematics, it's a tremendous advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Anyway, I appreciate your program. Whatever I hear, it's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments.
Take care.
Caller, you're on the air?
Yeah.
You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello, Don. I'm a grandmother. I live here in Laytonville. I have 5 grandchildren in the Laytonville School District.
Hmm.
2 of my children have graduated from this school, and I'd like to thank you very, very much for this show. And welcome home, Ruth.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. I'd just like to remind everyone who, if you're trying to call and don't get through, just try back again. You will get through eventually.
The number, once again, is 456-9991.
It was interesting points that our last caller brought up. It really seems that these tests are designed for a certain type of person, but when you consider the 300 million people, it's really tough to deal with them all. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I think you guys are doing a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
I have to agree with you about the testing not being productive, that schools have to work too hard to pass the test.
Sorry for interrupting you. Could you turn down your radio a bit, please?
Okay, how's that?
Yeah, it sounds better.
That's better. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's very difficult when schools want to provide a good education.
Mm-hmm.
Stuck trying to pass STAR tests, and that's very, very difficult for schools to work with. I imagine it's also very difficult to have to tell students that work as hard as they can, that even though they did 4 years of high school and they got passing grades from their teachers, that mm-hmm. They don't get the diploma.
Yeah, that's true.
yeah.
It's very, very unfair.
It is.
One thing, though, I wanted to disagree about with the voucher programs that are starting, or the idea of voucher programs, which I agree is probably detrimental to public education. But I just wanted to make the distinction between charter schools, which are public schools,
mm-hmm.
and voucher programs, which are programs to pay tuition at private schools. You know, at a public school, at a charter school, they're all credentialed teachers. They all get paid the same salaries as a public school teacher, and they have to obey all the public school rules, including they have to take the STAR test. So
mm-hmm.
the word for public charter schools, they are a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good day with your program. I'll continue to listen.
Thank you for clarifying.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Mm-hmm. Once again, back to what we were talking about, just what we were discussing about the cultural issues, is that when you have this many people meant to be in a one-size-fits-all kind of test, it doesn't work too well. Caller, you're on the air.
Great, thanks. I don't have a question. I've got a comment in regards to the fact that kids who don't pass the exit exam and don't get a high school diploma also lose the right to financial aid at the college level.
Yes, that's true.
So it impacts a huge number of kids who might otherwise maybe take a year off or, you know, maybe want to go into trades or do something else, who could go on to, you know, the community college system or a trade school, but otherwise can't because the financial aid is no longer available to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really discouraging for some kids because that can really, like, if you don't pass this one test, you've gone through all of high school and you plan to go on farther, but then you don't pass this test and then you can't have financial aid and you can't go any farther, and it sort of, like, puts up a wall for anybody who wants to go farther but just can't.
It's also interesting to me that if we had, for example, a military draft, our kids could still go to war, could still be drafted in the military, even though they don't have a high school diploma.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is an interesting point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi there. Before you get to the end of your show, I'm just wondering if there's anything that you would like the listening audience to do. Is there any action that people can take or that you feel should be taken at this point with regards to testing? And I'll just hear your comments off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. One of the ideas that one of our callers had was actually to, you know, talk to the school board and, you know, get their opinions on it and you know, ask them to really speak with, you know, their supervisors and try and change things that way. And I think that's a really valid valid idea.
Caller, you're on the air.
Mary.
You're breaking up a little bit. Can't really hear you.
Sorry, there was a little bit of static there, caller, and we couldn't really understand anything.
Another thing I think we could do is just go to school boards and go to schools and stuff and encourage more programs that don't exactly follow the test. Because unless there's, you know, a call for these programs, you know, mushroom growing and building trades, and unless there's a call for these programs, then they're just going to, you know, slowly be replaced by more, you know, the more prep classes and stuff, and more, I mean, not that those are bad, but the more standards classes that are made for, you know, passing these tests and stuff.
I really agree with that, and not that, I mean, college prep classes are really good, but not everyone is going to college, and what the government is doing is just sort of trying to group everyone into one single area, and that's not really going to work out because everyone is different and everyone comes from different backgrounds or wants to do different things with their lives.
Yeah, I agree. There should definitely be some more programs for those people that don't want that don't have the option of going on to college because of financial problems or just because of that's not what they want to do. Mm-hmm. So schools should definitely try to maybe put in a couple programs for those people that aren't so interested in college.
Yeah, and what that other caller said about financial aid, I think that's really important because for a lot of students, I know financial aid is a really big part of whether or not they're going to go on to college, and it's really important for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And so I'd really just like to encourage everyone, I mean, especially parents, you know, if you have kids in school who were in school or will be in school, any also retired educators, people who have any kind of connection to the school system, it's not too late now to start, you know, working on these things. Talk to the school systems and stuff and, you know, make sure that you have an idea of what's going on, because if people stop caring about what happens in the schools and how they're being taught and what's being taught, then slowly more, you know, it's just sort of going to degenerate. So, you know, try and make your voice heard. If you have an opinion on something, say it.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts tonight have been me, Janelle,
Ruth,
and Sean.
Thank you to our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We're happy to have able to broadcast from the Willett Studio. Youth Speaks Out is in need of funding. If you as an individual or organization can help sponsor this project, please contact the director, Dan Roberts. Dan may be reached by phone at 459-1760, by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs and streaming audio. That's www.youthspeaksout.net. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who expressed them. Our next show will be on the last Sunday of the month. That's February 26th at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening, and good night.